This podcast is brought to you in part by Specialties.
Are you in a band that wants merch, but you're not sure where to go?
Are you looking for great quality and affordable pricing?
Do you have a design that you'd like to put on a koozie for your favorite consumable beverage?
How about office swag for your job or giveaway items for your events?
Okay, you get the point.
Look no further than Specialties for all of your heart's printing desires. This Is Not My Magnum Opus listeners can act now and get 10% off your first order if you tell them Could Be Better sent you. Visit their website at www.special-tees.com or use the link in the show notes to get the conversation started. You can even call ahead and visit their showroom to see the types of products they offer. Again, telling them Could Be Better sent you via email, phone call, or carrier pigeon will get you that 10% off your first order.
That's special-tees.com. Specialties. If you haven't worked with them, they want to work with you.
This Is Not My Magnum Opus is proud to be a part of the Could Be Better podcast network. We're passionate about creating and using these platforms to dive into topics such as exploring lo-fi, impulsive, small, and otherwise overlooked artworks and creative practices, what happened in the world this week and how to laugh through or at it, and hearing stories from musicians from all walks of life. Check out these podcasts, Could Be Better, This Is Not My Magnum Opus, and The Weekly with Kiki, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can visit couldbebettermeh.com/podcasts in the show notes to see the current shows on the Could Be Better podcast network. Come join us as we discover more about ourselves, the community around us, and maybe even something worth sharing. Or not. Now, here's our show. Hello, and welcome to This Is Not My Magnum Opus, a podcast about small and lo-fi artworks, creative practice, and what it means to be an artist. I'm your host, Nicole Ringel, and I'm here with my partner and producer, Spencer Newcomb.
Hello.
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 Hello. All right.
You're silly.
What are we doing here?
I think we're introing a podcast.
Wow, really? That's what we're doing here. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So this week we have another conversation with another artist. If this is your first time joining us, every week we bring a new artist to your airwaves to talk about a small artwork of their choosing as a way to witness and discuss the kind of building blocks of creative practice and their relationship to creativity and making as a whole.
Yeah. So who are we talking to today?
So this week we're sharing a conversation with Chinen Aimi. So Aimi and I met when we were in grad school together.
Where did you guys go to grad school?
So we went to UMBC.
Okay.
Their intermedia and digital art program.
Cool.
So she came into the program with a really strong foundation in ceramic arts, which is primarily what we talk about in our conversation. But her ceramic art practice has like an incredible depth to it. So she often has described herself as an anthropological detective because she has a really unique origin story. So she was actually, her parents are, or they met in Okinawa. Her dad was a Marine and her mom was Native Okinawan. And so, you know, she grew up in Okinawa and then moved to the States when she, I think when she was in high school. And so much of her creative practice is informed by her kind of like relentless tenacity to uncover not just, you know, the history of Okinawa, but like the forgotten or like in large part destroyed history of indigenous culture there. And so much of that is tied to, you know, tracing histories that, have been kind of overwritten and destroyed through war and colonization and all sorts of just like atrocious forces that have kind of like informed, the colonization of Okinawa. And so, like really heavy material in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I was just looking through her website and it is, it's a lot of, you know, her content has like this heaviness and like this, yeah, detective work like this, mm-hmm. Uncovering of like her own like personal roots and uncovering, you know, bits of history and trying to process and understand those things while also being like poignantly beautiful. Like her mm-hmm. work is very beautiful.
And yeah, she does a really good job of like saying things how they are, mm-hmm. you know, like war needs to stop.
Right.
Right. Like pointing these things out and saying, hello, like, why are we still here?
Yeah.
While also, you know, using art as a transformative tool to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, yeah. you know, she says even in our conversation that art saved her in a way, yeah. right? That art is her way of making sense of the right. world around her. And also, I think, you know, as a person who has witnessed her artwork evolve over the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, mm-hmm. I think, you know, it does a really good job of, you know, bringing a viewer back to center and kind of like reacquainting. I always feel a sense of like reacquainting with the natural world and like nature and materials when kind of looking at her artwork.
Yeah, I feel like I have like a certain reverence for artists like Aimee who do a lot of like background work, and her work being grounded in like her past, where there was a lot of beauty and a lot of hurt. And I think that she weaves those two things together really well. And I think she's really good at bringing us along as like, you know, the one experiencing her prompt. Like, I think that she does a really great job, like seamlessly bringing us along and, you know, allowing us to feel those things along with her, both like the beauty and the pain and like the longing for Okinawa.
And some of her larger artworks that we'll post pictures of on our Instagram, some of the larger artworks almost create a simulation of the kind of detective work that yeah. she's already done.
Right.
Right. She's giving you all the pieces, but she's not giving you a history lesson.
Right. Right.
Right. And so as a viewer, you're given the like literal pieces. Mm-hmm. Some of her works are actually like tabletop games without any rules.
Right.
Right. So, you know, you might have like some clay marbles that like you can throw around or like a pile of fake money that mm-hmm. you can place in different ways. Right. So it's kind of a simulation of all these pieces of, you know, Okinawan nature and history and, yeah, so much context.
Yeah. She weaves it together very beautifully. So I would encourage, you know, checking out her site. We'll link to that. Today, we're talking more about like her ceramic work mm-hmm. and more on like the, I would say like the more crafty, like form functions,
functional vessels.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, her, discipline as a ceramicist has also evolved quite a bit mm-hmm. over the past, yeah, like 10 years, maybe even longer. But yeah, her and her husband, Mitchell Noah, who we'll also interview, mm-hmm. we'll share an interview with him next week. they run a business together called Spatial Oddities Ceramic and Glass. And so that's kind of their functional object website mm-hmm. Store. So you can, you know, buy, you know, plates and bowls, goblets and cups. And they're all super beautiful. So yeah. we'll link to those as well. But mm-hmm. for our conversation, she brought like a collection of different, not magnum opuses, mm-hmm. Which I was actually really excited about because when we were in grad school, I would always kind of peek into her studio and see, you know, hanging objects of all sorts of different varieties that like we never really talked about in critique, but I was always like, oh, like there's so many beautiful things in here. Like which ones are art and which ones aren't. and so it was really nice. The things that she brought, yeah. she brought like a little clay rattle and like a collection of shells kind of strung onto a string that made a really nice kind of crinkly sound.
And she also like, she dives into, you know, the big A art, mm-hmm. and like, I think her, in a certain point, I think she even says like anything can be art. Mm-hmm. I do love how they weave that into like their everyday. Mm-hmm. because the things that she's making and the things that we're talking about have a function, while they also are like super aesthetically pleasing, they have function, to where like she and her partner Mitchell are making, you know, dinnerware, cups and bowls, and objects around the house that, you know, they use on a daily basis that have more meaning than store-bought items, you know, and that's intentional. Like, they intentionally want to surround themselves with things that, you know, they've given purpose. Like, after creating them, they've given them purpose.
I loved the part of our conversation where Aimee talked about choosing certain dishware for certain foods that she'll prepare. Yeah, because that idea of art having function and, like, kind of shaping our daily lives to then, like, literally nourish our bodies. Yeah, I love that idea.
The interweaving of those, like, you know, nourishing our physical bodies and our spirits at the same time. Man,
yeah, so she says art feeds my soul.
Yeah.
Which is just so like so lovely to think about. So we hope that this interview feeds your soul today. As always, you can check out Aimee's work, links to her website, as well as Spatial Oddities. And also she'll mention a protest magazine, Issue Speak, that her work was recently featured in. So we'll link to that in the show notes as well. We hope you enjoy our conversation with Aimee. Hello.
Hi.
Thanks so much for making the time to join us today and talk about your Not Magnum Opus.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about some of my work that I just kind of do and don't really think about.
Okay. So yes.
We'll see where I pull my words out of, but yeah, I think it's going to be fun.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited to kind of, make the space for the small stuff. So we'll certainly dive into it. But kind of my starting question in all of these conversations so far has been to ask about kind of the origins of your creativity or your creative impulse. So I'm curious, you know, what were the first experiences you had of like either being drawn to art as an idea or art as a process, or even like the idea or notion of being an artist?
I always liked to use my hands when I was little. So playing in the mud and like making little onigiris out of mud. I think that is kind of been always the start. And because now doing ceramics, that's mud. So it's just a refined form of what I used to play with as a child, and like making certain kinds of foods and playing house was really fun. So this imaginative play that happened, I think that was definitely a big part of like how I started considering some of the things I enjoyed doing as art as I got older. But, and like, I also used to draw a lot of nature. I remember having an assignment in, I think it was elementary, maybe third grade.
And this was in Okinawa.
And you had to have your art supplies all set up, and you got one of those big boards with a string around it so that you can prop it up on your neck and take it outside.
Oh, wow.
And then you all sketch. So some of the assignments were about observing plants. And I remember very clearly sketching out plants and how I loved the little details that you could notice from just by looking. I think that's kind of where it started with art, because drawing is something you can't deny that it's art when it comes to drawing. Right. So I think that's definitely an act that I had fun doing. Mm-hmm. And you didn't really need very many things. Mm-hmm. Pencil, paper, that's about it.
I love drawing as like a practice that like fine tunes your ability to pay attention to. Because I've taught drawing a couple of times myself, and it's so fun because getting students in drawing one, you know, they'll draw like a box or like a cylindrical form or whatever and have the idea of what it is. Mm-hmm. But then when they get down to like actually making their idea of the object that's on their paper match what they're actually seeing, it's like a whole revelatory process that's like so fun. So I love, like that idea of like taking that out like plein air style, like out into nature to like understand and consider the plants and things around you is like a beautiful concept. And wow, like just knowing your work, like all of those things are through lines, right? Like this observance of, you know, plants and like natural materials around you. You mentioned like the dirt turning into clay. But I wonder if you could kind of like give a little background of kind of the materials and concepts that you work with in your practice.
Currently, right? So currently I'm hyper-focused on sculpting and making functional objects with clay. I am using a medium fire red rock clay right now, but just from a blob, you can form kind of pretty much anything you want if you know how to structure it, if you know how to manipulate time in a way, because the way it dries is really important in how it holds its shape. But it's all depended on my imagination. Like, what can I form out of this blob? So, like, if I don't have the will or the want to make an object, I'm not going to have anything really nice. And like kind of playing with that and pushing myself is really fun. And I think I'm finally, after basically working with ceramics in school and really learning about it for a decade, I'm finally at the point where I actually can be happy with some of the works that I'm like creating in the final product. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of critiquing, and because I could have an idea in my head, but to actually manifest it physically was a skill that had to be refined.
And that's like the craftsmanship side of art. That's almost like the discipline balance to like the creative balance. Mm-hmm. That's like always an interplay, like present in the work.
Yeah, definitely. Because I get all kinds of ideas in my head, but only a small percentage actually manifests in a physical form. So, that's what's interesting with clay, though, is like I can really test my limits on like how my imagination can be formed into physical shapes.
So I guess we can kind of circle back to like this idea of a not magnum opus work, so like an artwork that is maybe like small in nature or like less ambitious or maybe just more impulsive in some way, that's not, you know, something that's conventionally thought of as something to be, you know, displayed in a gallery in the Guggenheim or, you know, but maybe is something more personal or significant to either your daily life or just your practice as an artist. So I'm curious if you can tell us a little bit about the works that you brought with you today.
Yes. So because I'm very interested in materials and like my background being born on the island of Okinawa and now I'm living in the U.S., I think about the land and how I was affected by the nature that surrounded me as a child. And so some of the objects that I make that never really gets shown too much is using seashells and found sea, basically like skeletons. And so it doesn't really get talked about, but I like looking at how it represents time, because the seashells technically are dead objects. It used to have life, and then that was done, and then they got washed up on the shore, and then with every tide and the moon cycle, it just wears down. And so a lot of the shells that I pick up actually have holes in them, and they're broken, and I enjoy collecting the similar forms of these shells and like stringing it together and making kind of like charms. And so in Okinawa, like Ryukyu culture too, there's a lot of like shamanism, animistic beliefs that plays into everyday life. And there's these really pointed, seven pointed, bigger like seashells that people would hang in front of their gates and entrances, and it was a way to ward off evil. And so like playing with that idea too, I think about these little strings of seashells and found beach objects as like little charms that like protect me from unwanted thoughts and yeah,
energies. So in its like ideal place, where would it be? Like the string of shells that you brought with you today. Like, is that like the, is it like a worn charm, or do you like hang it up at home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have them hanging in almost every room. But most of them are next to doorways or by windows, and also next to a mirror is another. So like entrance and reflection, these spaces that some of those kind of thoughts happen is where I like to place some to really think about that. Like those spaces are so liminal in that like it's hard to define it as one thing. And I think those are spaces that can get contaminated very easily with unwanted energies in some ways. So thinking about that, I have these charms as like to focus on more of the good thoughts.
I love like how there's such like a simple beauty, like, and that there's like a practice that comes with the creation of them, right? Kind of similar to like what you were talking about of you know, being a kid and drawing and paying attention to the things around you, like the process of gathering shells being like a very like calming activity, and like that process being embedded in the object at the end. Yeah, it's like kind of a beautiful thought.
Yeah, super calming activity. And I always say that art really saved me. It like puts me in the right place, regardless of how I might be feeling with what's happening in the world and all the contradictions. And especially with like being in the U.S. and I feel homesick. Basically all the time. And so having these shells, which is kind of, sometimes I think it's a mean act, but because I feel like a colonized body, I've colonized these shells and like removed them from their homeland. And I've brought them with me to almost like, represent my trauma as well. And so I think that's the other way that it holds power, in that like I can turn some of the negatives into positives if I like think about it in a different way. But just, it's so tactile, and I love the sounds it makes. I love it.
So I'm curious also, because like the idea of like art saving you, like there's so much there, and like so many artists have different relationships to making and different like processes and practices. And, you know, some folks, when they make, have a heightened level of anxiety around like the success or failure of the artwork. And then other folks have, you know, processes that are grounded in like, or processes and practices that they truly enjoy and get joy from. Mm-hmm. And I wonder like where on that spectrum, like it sounds like the practices that you use kind of fall to one side of that, but I wonder like where you kind of situate yourself like within that idea.
Yeah, I think I make because I want to, because I need to, and it's a therapy, you know, it's a way to calm myself and think through some of the thoughts that I'm having in my head, and like a way to reflect and spend a little time on myself. And like, mm-hmm. like making art is a conversation with myself. That's basically what it is. And so I can critique myself, you know, mm-hmm. but then I can kind of adjust what needs to be, but then I can be happy about what comes out of it too. And critique in like a healthy way. I don't make art and be mad that I didn't complete it a certain way. I just know what I need to adjust the next mm-hmm. time I try. And so, which I hope like that I kind of translate that into my everyday mm-hmm. too.
For sure. And I think you have a couple more functional objects here as well, kind of connecting to that idea of art in your everyday. Mm-hmm. Do you want to introduce us to a couple more?
Yeah. So the other objects I have are just raw ceramic clay. One's a sphere with little marbles on the inside. So
yeah, that one has an amazing sound as well.
It's like a rattle, but I made this a little before, I think I was pregnant when I made this. So, and then I have other clay balls, and like making spheres out of clay is another therapy for me. And it just, I think about the earth and the planet and how we're connected more on like a cosmic scale, because it's just this shape. It rolls in. It feels good. And it's like you don't have the hard edges. That kind of represents a lot of negative things for me. And so, and there's with these, like I don't smooth it out all the way so that there's the mark of the hand. And so mm-hmm. it's very organic, which I enjoy the sensibility of. And then like with the clay balls too, they represent like marbles in a game piece too a lot of times. So it's a very abstract game in that there's no real set rules. And so like the other object I brought in is like a little dish, a little plate, and it has north, east, south, west, written, but also in the Ryukyu language. And so like direction's really important in thinking about where we exist in relation to the cosmic cycle. Mm-hmm. And so the Ninufa and Unufa, and it's like Nishi Agari Fe Iri. It just is a big part of thinking about your place in nature. And mm-hmm. it's a sense of belonging, I think, that it comes back to. So
I love the idea that like your first like material love, like mud, like being recycled into ceramic, is now like a kind of like cosmic compass, you know, like an orientation like tool. like there's something like beautiful about like your work really brings material to the surface and like makes like very apparent like what it's made out of. Mm-hmm. Even like you mentioned like the mark of the hand in each of the clay balls, right? Mm-hmm. The attention to the material being the orienting force feels significant and powerful here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It definitely has a lot of power with me, the material itself. So a lot of times I don't like hiding what it's made out of. I rather kind of highlight the material and the importance of it because it's part of us and we're part of it. And I just, it's really fun to know where, like, I belong in that connection. I mean, it's super abstract too at the same time, but
and also functional, right? Yeah. Like you said, like the clay ball with the other balls inside of it like functions as a rattle. Mm-hmm. And you made it while you were pregnant, and like each of these objects has like a kind of form and function like in your daily life. And so I'm kind of like interested in your thoughts and feelings around these moments of art embedded in your daily life and like how that functions like through like your relationships and like through your like roles as a partner, as a mother, as a person, as a being in the cosmic world that we're in.
I think art is everywhere, and it's just our way of recognizing is the most important part of what kind of makes it hold meaning for each of us. And so I know there's a lot of people that don't quite understand art, which I can understand because it's such a big idea, because it can be everything and anything. And so, but that's the part. Art's about having imagination on what is art, and that can be anything. And I think that's what's important. So like in my everyday, I forget that I'm surrounded by art sometimes, but if I take a moment and actually look, then I can see like, oh, I'm eating out of a dish that I made that holds the food, that gives me life, and that has a history that took time. So like it was just a pile of dirt, but it came into being, and then it gets used over and over every day and becomes part of a ritual that I'm sometimes aware of, sometimes not. And I think something is art when I like actually can recognize it.
Yeah, for sure. And I love the idea, because I actually have a few spatial oddities, some of the forms that you've made and your husband Mitchell have made in the cycle of dishes and objects in my own home. And I always find like when I make something and interact with it, I'm like grounded in a way because I love the object that I'm interacting with, and not like in part because, I know you guys and you're significant, in my life, but also like the object kind of like disrupting like the space that's very familiar, with this call back to like these larger ideas that are like significant.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, it's true. It does disrupt from just a commercial object. There's complete different meaning attached to a lot of the everyday items when it's handmade. And like a lot of times we have certain preferred dishes, and today, which one are we going to use? And so, oh, this food will be better with this dish because of the shape and the color. And so there's a lot more play that happens than it being just like a mass-produced and manufactured white plain plate, mm-hmm. which, you know, there's a place for that, but.
And I love how that like resonates as a real experience, you know, because like even for folks who are more familiar with art and like love art and go to galleries and things like that idea of like a piece of like functional artwork, like disrupting your space and like having a like tangible mm-hmm. impact and like this like playful feeling that you get as you're putting like dinner on the table for like friends or family, you know, like that, it's just like a beautiful idea and like kind of like adds another dimension of like, I think a lot of the time we imagine art as like existing in idea space mm-hmm. and kind of like it can be a prompt that we react to in a controlled environment, but actually it can like move so far beyond mm-hmm. that like controlled space.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. And I think that's kind of what we love about Spatial Oddity Studio with our making ceramic and glass is that unless it's being used, then it's lacking. It hasn't mm-hmm. like met its full purpose of its creation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like in my house, like most of the glassware is made by Mitchell and most of the ceramics made by me or my friends. And it's really great. And what I think makes it interesting too is some of the manufactured glass. We maybe have like a few mason jars for storage, but those objects really stand like out and mm-hmm. like separate from those. And so it makes me think about how those were created and for what purpose. So it does like make me think about just how like materials exist. In like the reasons for its existence.
And I love like thinking about like your home as a collection of all the artworks that you've kind of like amassed through like both like your connections in the world and also your processes and like learning curves and like evolution of like your own like styles and functions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if you're interested in talking about, like, how, like, your role as a mother and kind of, like, the growth of your, like, family and domestic space has impacted your creative practice.
I mean, first of all, like, it's interesting managing time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is very difficult, but... Yoshi is 19 months mm-hmm. today. And so, like, even when I get the urge to want to make art and Yoshi needs attention, I kind of look at him and think, like, he's going to be this little for a very short time. Mm-hmm. And I will always be able to make objects. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my making has... been limited, but mm-hmm. just observing Yoshi has become a big part of my, I guess, everyday practice in that I think about how him being surrounded by certain objects are going to influence his way of thinking mm-hmm. that was different than how I was raised in a lot of ways. Like in my like home as a child, it was just like mass-produced things and really cheap things, and mm-hmm. It wasn't like we had any art objects mm-hmm. in the house. And so, like, and my parents didn't really believe in art, and they kind of made it seem like art wasn't important. Probably even stated so. Mm-hmm. But it's because they don't understand art. Mm-hmm. So I think in that way, like being a mother now with like baby Yoshi, I think about how he's going to have different thoughts because of the objects that surround him.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm hoping can lead to him having more imagination and allowed, like having that like permission to imagine anything he wants, which I didn't really have as a child. It's like any sort of like big imaginative idea was like shut down or dismissed and was thought of as crazy or not practical. But like art doesn't have to be practical. And so and like playing with the kind of idea of what's actually necessary, what's a need and what's a want, and kind of with objects when it comes to art is interesting because my parents always said that art is not necessary. But because they don't see it from my perspective,
right,
they say that I think art is necessary because art feeds my soul. Like it's an energy source for me. Like it's a way to like comprehend what's happening in the world, what's happening in my daily life, what's happening with the relationships I have with my community. Art allows me to process and like make connections in that way. And even with objects, like I have a relationship with objects that I hold. And so art is important in that way. And I like think a lot with Yoshi about how, and I hope that he'll see the way we interact with objects and how that will shape the way he interacts with his world.
I love also like the idea of like you've been making games like without rules.
Yes.
For a long time in your practice at like various scales, right? You've made massive board games that are like as big as like a tabletop, right?
Yeah.
And also, you know, these like clay ball forms that are like they could become a game at any point, right? And I love the idea of like you like dwelling in a home that's filled with potential games like all the time, if only you have the like imagination or like impulse to make it that way, which is kind of like a little microcosm of like how you just described, you know, kind of situating Yoshi within this world of like objects to interact with.
Yeah, like the idea of games is always like so interesting because really I think it's more about play. And then when it becomes games, they have rules. Playing, and then you set rules, and that becomes a game that you play. And so, but like those games and those rules can really shift any time if you want it to. And so, but you have to have imagination, and you have to be, what do you call it? Like, almost like roundabout way, like either bypassing the rules or like tricking the rules so that you're like adding another layer or a new rule or like, you know, kind of just making something new out of what's already there. And I think that's what's interesting about game and play.
Yeah, and playing with and manipulating systems. So you're kind of like creating this like simulation to mess around with the rules because that's actually invited in that kind of space. And then like that totally is like, you know, a playground for the world, right? We live within all these systems that can feel so overwhelming and overbearing. And like larger than anybody.
Rules made up by humans. So
that becomes systems that then, you know, hopefully we can find as a human species, like some flexibility within those systems to hopefully one day create a shift in them.
I think if we can break out of this whole idea that things are set in the way it is and have imagination and that we can actually shift the rules, bend the rules, change the rules so that it works better. I think it's important, especially because a lot of rules in society too, is very tacit in that it's not said that it's a rule, but for some reason everybody understands certain things as a rule. Mm-hmm. And so that to me is a little fucked up. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why I create these game boards without rules purposefully, because games usually have very concrete rules and people know what they're doing and how they're playing it. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you take away those rules, people don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And they have to use their imagination to move the pawns and kind of navigate the little system or world. And kids are naturally good at that. And so somehow mm-hmm. we beat it out of them.
Right.
And I don't want that to happen to Yoshi. Because I know it was beaten out of me and I had to like basically dig it back out.
Mm.
And like I was able to do that because I'm stubborn. Mm-hmm. And I had this like, you know, kind of rebellious way of wanting to prove to my parents that what they said about the world was false.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. Like, at least prove it to myself that what they said is not true
mm-hmm.
about the world. And I can make it however way I wanted to. Yeah, it can be hard sometimes. And sometimes yeah. what they say makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because they limit themselves to that. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to play by those rules. So if I don't like the game, I'm not going to play it.
What a great line. That's awesome. I was looking at the Spatial Oddities Instagram earlier, mm-hmm. and I saw like this beautiful little video that is to me also a not magnum opus
mm-hmm.
Moment, which was Mitchell holding out this glass mug mm-hmm. to Yoshi.
The reflector mug, yeah.
Yeah, and Yoshi's just holding it, and Mitchell is too, to kind of like, I'm sure, make sure that it doesn't drop.
Mm-hmm.
But Yoshi is just holding it and like, seeing how the light is kind of like reflecting mm-hmm. in the object. And what a beautiful moment to kind of like, yeah, like circle back on all of these ideas that like we've talked about of like kind of like both like starting with the kind of fine tuning your own perception and craftsmanship and ability to create an object, and then also like teach and extend an arm to, mm-hmm. You know, a child who's like forming these ideas about the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so important. It's so really, yeah, it's fun watching Yoshi interact with our objects. Because in that little video too, with him holding the mug, I thought it was super cute where he like put his little hands in the mug, like, oh, in here you can put stuff, you know, mm-hmm. this is where liquids go, kind of. And he knows what a mug is. It doesn't matter like what kind of shape it is or what kind of handle, what color, what texture it has. If he sees a vessel, he knows what it's for, and because he'll mm-hmm. mimic drinking out of it. And it's so cute. So kind of like, you know, in that way, like, I think it's helping to build, like, anything can be used as, like, to hold liquids that, like, nourish us. And mm-hmm. kind of going back to the basics and how important some of those everyday rituals are, which, you know, just drinking water is so important. And,
mm-hmm.
like, it's totally different when I'm drinking water out of my favorite stemware that Mitchell made, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I feel somehow more nourished, and then it also makes it more fun mm-hmm. to drink it, and it adds a little more importance to the act of drinking water mm-hmm. because it is, instead of drinking out of a plastic bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, you're caring for yourself within your community,
mm-hmm.
and it's like an object that echoes that significance.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're drawing near our time okay. here. But before we ended, I just wanted to ask, like, if people are interested in your work or your work with Spatial Oddities, like how to find you, and also if you have anything coming up that you wanted to mention.
Let's see. There is a protest magazine, a digital PDF on, it's called Speak, the magazine issue. It's a communication issue, so it talks about language, and there's a few other artists included, but my writing and some of my photographs are included in that. So yeah, protest magazine Speak is the issue, but it's a free PDF download, so anybody can look at it.
Nice. I'm sure we'll be able to link to it in our show notes. So if people want to find it,
they'll have the link. That was the most recent little writing that came out. And my website is Chinen and another N, Aimee.com. And I haven't updated it, but you can get like a gist of the different mediums I use in my work. But I think communication is a big part of my work too. So there's writings that I would like to like share a little bit more as well. But so that's my website. And then like Spatial Oddity Studio is the ceramic and glass functional ware for the most part. It's objects that becomes part of your home and everyday ritual. And so you can just go to spatialodditystudio.com for that. And we do have an Instagram account too under Spatial Oddity Studio. So
awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about your work with me today. It was a really lovely conversation.
Thank you, Nicole. Yeah, this was fun. It's always good to see you and always fun to talk about art because it just like gives me more ideas about how we're connected, what I could do more. So I do love that. Yeah, so thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks. For images and links to the artwork we discuss on the show, follow us on Instagram at thisisnotmymagnumopus. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify. You can also leave us a rating or add a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Music for this podcast was written and performed by Frederick's resident shoegaze band, TV. That's T-E-E-V-E-E, period. This Is Not My Magnum Opus is proud to be part of the Could Be Better podcast network. Executive produced by Chris Perry and Colin McGuire of Could Be Better. This show is made possible by a Maryland State Arts Council creativity grant. Thanks for listening. We hope you'll join us again next week.
Do you like change? Do you love the familiar smells of your bedroom studio? Listen no further, friends, because the Could Be Better podcast is back and as disappointing as ever.
Indeed, Chris, this season we are changing almost absolutely nothing. The show will drop on Thursdays and we hope to include guests. We'll also shamelessly plug any and all events of which we are part.
So like and follow wherever you listen to podcasts or check out our website, www.couldbebettermeh.com, or let's pretend this never happened. I know I will.
Me too, and do not forget, this could be better.